This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back, folks. Ileana Lede, Vice President of Public Policy for GNO Inc., joins us. Ileana, welcome to the show.
Hey there. How are you?
Pretty good. We're coming out of a little bit of a quiet time relative to Congress. They're getting back into the swing of things. I know there are a lot of different funding mechanisms that you guys have your finger on the pulse of. Let's start there as to where we stand on some of these issues.
Yes, and I feel as though we've been here for about, 2 years just closely monitoring what's happening. I mean, GNO Inc. is always actively involved with federal issues, but really, when the COVID pandemic started and you started to see those federal aid programs come through, like the Paycheck Protection Program and the various programs come through the SBA, and today, the infrastructure bill that was passed a couple of months ago is really consuming a lot of our energy and time focusing on that funding that's going to be coming our way here in Louisiana. And really, it's exciting because it's one of those areas that we've been talking about for a very long time, infrastructure. We need to prioritize infrastructure. We have this backlog of projects that we need to address, both from a safety standpoint and economic development standpoint. So it's really exciting to be at this point where we're actually looking at the funding coming this way to make those improvements.
So if you could, for the benefit of the listening audience, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding as to exactly how this is going to work and how this money will pass from the Fed to either state or local directly, if you could outline that. Or do we know?
Sure. Sure. So the way we look at the infrastructure bill is there are two paths of funding. So there is one that's the formula funding, and that's based allocated on the size of the state, and so that's what Louisiana is going to receive without having to compete for it. So that's about $7 billion. And compared to what we would normally receive from the federal government, that's going to be about $200 million more per year for the next 5 years. So a good chunk of change, $200 million, 5 years, that's going to be additional. That's formula funding. The bulk of that, $7 billion goes through to Department of Transportation and Development. So that's highways, that's roads, that's bridges. And then you have some of that other money might go to other areas such as drinking water or broadband or some public transportation. So that's the formula funding piece. And that's the $200 million additional that Louisiana will receive per year. Then you have the competitive funding piece. And that's what a lot of folks, including GNO Inc., are really closely looking at right now. And that's the new grant programs. Some of it is additional money for existing grant programs, and some of these are brand new grant programs that we're going to be able to compete for. So those could come through different federal agencies. So it could be through the Department of Energy or the Department of Commerce or the Department of Transportation. And right now, what's happening at the federal level is they're creating the programs. So they're setting up the rules, who is eligible, how do you apply, what kind of information do you need to submit. but they have put out information, basic information on what those grants are. So when we look through the list and we see something like, you know, there's $5 billion for increasing the resiliency of the energy grid, that is something that is very interesting to us and something that we want to be competitive in. If we see something, safety improvements to rail infrastructure, that might be something that we want to hone in on, or port infrastructure improvements. So right now we've been identifying what grant programs are attractive to us in our region, and speaking to partners throughout the region, whether that's city officials, parish leadership, the Regional Planning Commission, the State Department of Transportation and Development, some business organizations, whether it's on the North Shore and Plaquemines Parish or the River Region, and speaking to them about these opportunities and aligning those opportunities with their priorities in these different areas.
And how much money's in that pot?
Quite a bit. So if you're looking at the energy grid, there's $5 billion there. If you're looking at there's a lot of focus on clean energy and renewables. There's a good bit of money there. So you're talking about probably hundreds of billions of dollars just in the little programs that we're looking at. We've already identified, I don't know, $200 billion. So it's hard to wrap your head around sometimes when you look at this massive amount of money, but you also have to remember that this is nationally. This is, you're competing nationally. And, you know, the guidance that we've received is what we need to be doing right now is getting our ducks in a row and getting specifics. So when we talk about that we want funding for broadband, what does that mean? What area are you looking at? Right now in our region, you know, you have access that's much higher in some areas. You're approaching, you know, on the North Shore, you're approaching, say, 80 to 90% in St. Tammany Parish. But when you look at Washington Parish, that's a lot lower. That might be at 60% in Washington Parish. So getting the data, so what is the access that's available right now? How much money is it going to cost to make the improvements? How many lines are we going to need to install? What kind of funding are you going to need to maintain those lines? So getting all the significant technical information so that you can submit a competitive application for those broadband dollars.
So as we enter and we're filing in these grant programs, and these are, as you point out, competitive in nature, do we compete at a local level as well, local to local, local to state, and then against everybody else in the country?
So we're really trying to get a regional approach where we're having everyone speak. And that's already happening in a lot of respects. The state is speaking to different municipalities about what their requests are, because many the applicant in many cases will be the state itself. In some cases, it's the state. In some cases, it's the local entity. So we really want to have a regional approach so there isn't as much competition within each other. But, of course, you're going to have different municipalities applying for funds. And there's also even opportunities for some private entities in those grant programs. So you might have a private company who is looking at carbon capture, and they might be competing against another company in another part of the state. I think the state is really doing a good job proactively to reach out to the different areas, and that's something that we're involved with as well, to make sure we're all asking for the general same things.
So, you know, I know that there's a desire to replace a couple of bridges, one in Lake Charles, one in Baton Rouge, for, along the I-10 corridor that are critical. Is that something that is going to be looked at under formula funding, or would that be in competitive, or can it be a combination of both?
It could be a combination of both. And so for the Baton Rouge Bridge, for example, there was some legislation passed in the last session that looks at taking some of the money that currently is collected through vehicle sales tax and putting that towards infrastructure projects. And so the Baton Rouge Bridge will get some funding from there, and then they can get some funding through the formula funding. And then if you don't get to the point where that's paid for, then you can look at different avenues. So that's a great question and something that we were asking initially as well. Say, you know, you don't have all the money you need through the formula funding or through a grant program. Can you use a couple of different grant programs to fund your project? And yes, that's absolutely what it's going to take when you're talking about, you know, larger scale projects.
You've been around a long time, and you know that when these programs come about, how fast people can get very creative in what they ask for. And in a lot of cases, they're just trying to tie down dollars and not really in a position to spend it, to receive it, to really do much with it. Is there any hope that there's going to be some fine-tuning to the processes that we've grown accustomed to, that there's a little bit more accountability before they start doling this money out?
You know, I think we're in a pretty good position in our region, just given our history, whether you're talking about Katrina or more recent disasters, and knowing what the federal government is looking for. And one of the things that they always want to see are local investments, local dollars that the, you know, locals are putting some money behind what they're asking for, or have, you know, a real strategy behind what it is that they're asking for, or specific, as specific as possible on how those dollars are going to be spent. So I do think we are in a better position because we are, have been through this before in another iteration. So I'm pleased every day in the conversations that we're having with folks across the region, how many people are talking to each other about the opportunities that are ahead.
I read an article the other day. It was very interesting, and you may or may not be aware of one of the frailties in moving from what we identify today as our traditional energy sources to our alternative energy sources, or green or otherwise, is that local and state government really haven't collectively and collaboratively come together to figure out grid patterns, where it makes the most sense. There's some areas that are more strategically beneficial to have solar farms or wind power or whatever. And a lot of times when you engage in these one-off projects, you actually take a step forward, you think, but it may be you're taking two or three steps back because it's not making as much sense relative to the grid. And the grid is really what controls everything. And I'm curious as to whether or not we have put ourselves in a position in this state to really bring, you know, the brilliant minds together to figure out where are our grid deficiencies from a strategic standpoint, obviously from a structural standpoint as well, and what are we going to do to improve upon that before we start doing these one-off projects of a solar farm over here or a wind farm over there or whatever, because you could end up with a very disjointed, inefficient system before it's all said and done, all for the sake of getting a federal grant dollar.
Well, I think what's encouraging on that front is that we have the state set up probably might have been a couple of months before COVID set in. The state set up this new office, this chief resilience officer. And I think, you know, that didn't get enough as much attention because then we started focusing on other things and reacting to the pandemic. But the state set up this chief resiliency officer with the idea of coordinating efforts across the state, across regions, speaking to the locals about what's happening at their level. So I think that's very encouraging that there will be more coordination at the state level, and the folks who are in that office are very, very much in communication with folks like GNO Inc. And so I think that you will see more of that coordination taking place as we move forward. But I think we're positioning ourselves pretty well on that front.
Yeah, I mean, you understand the competitive nature. You have a lot of property owners that own land that the highest and best use at this point in time might have been farming 5 years ago, but now it might be to put up solar panels. Well, that's great. It's good for that landowner, but it may not be necessarily that great for the grid. And those are the kind of friction issues that arise. And in this article, they make the point that you're not maximizing the dollars. You're not maximizing what you're doing because you don't have the 100,000-foot plan nor strategy of how you want to go about doing it.
And yeah, you have these, you know, one-off conversations that come through. You know, there's some debate. There will be a bill introduced in the legislature talking about solar. And yes, you're just talking about one small aspect. But no, I think it's good that this, the, you know, competing interests, if you will, is getting this kind of attention and publicly in the media, because it's good for more people to start paying attention to it and to prompt those conversations.
Because this is an opportunity that may not come again, you might agree or maybe not, for years to come, another 10 years, where you see this amount of money flowing from the federal government to state and locals for these types of projects.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, this is an unprecedented. We haven't seen something at this level ever, in decades at least. So, yeah, it really is incumbent upon us to be able to take advantage and be forward-looking on how we're going to use those investments.
Yeah. I just throw that out there because I really believe, you know, and I know I hear you and Michael and others talking about prioritization all the time, and it's so easy to move away from that when you got that these beautiful gold-plated carrots hanging out in front of you and you're just trying to put together something good on a piece of paper that somebody feels great about, and you get funded. And, you know, and everyone else is sitting around scratching their head saying, how did this happen? I mean, I know you've seen that happen. I've seen it happen. You know, and I just hope we do and work hard to minimize that as much as possible. All right, we got to get to a break. Ileana Lede, Vice President of Public Policy for GNO Inc., joins us. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, we're visiting with Ileana Lede, Vice President of Public Policy with GNO Inc. We've been talking about the infrastructure bill, formula funding versus competitive funding, and how we go about strategizing and trying to put ourselves in the best position to receive as many dollars under this infrastructure financing. And Ms. Lede pointed out, and I agree, that this is an opportunity that we may not see in a long time. So we got to really make the best use of this. But Ileana, you bring with you today a special guest. Can you introduce her to us, please?
Glad to. So the Delta Regional Authority is one of the agencies that we work with very closely at Greater New Orleans, Inc. And so today we're privileged to be joined by Leslie Dandridge Durham, who is the alternate federal co-chairwoman of the DRA, the Delta Regional Authority, who can tell us a little bit about how we work together. And I just want to say, you know, GNO Inc., Noel, you're very generous and, you know, giving us credit for our efforts and our successes around workforce, but really, you know, I want to point to the DRA as really being instrumental in these successes. So we're really excited to have Leslie join us today.
Well, Leslie, welcome to the show. We appreciate you spending time with us this morning. Can you tell us a little bit about what Delta Regional Authority is involved in?
Absolutely, Newell. Thank you so much. And thank you for that wonderful introduction. I have actually a few notes that I wanted to talk to you about and with, but I am from Louisiana, so I'm not a stranger to any of you all, and I'll listen to WWL every chance I get to come through New Orleans. Being from North Louisiana in Tensau Parish, we have to pipe in sunshine, so we don't get to you all up there, so we actually have to come down south to here. So I love listening to what all you do, and thank you for your role in getting information out to our folks in the Delta. But the Delta Regional Authority, it was created in 2000 to promote and encourage the economic development of the Mississippi Delta and the Alabama Black Belt regions. Our mission was to create jobs, build communities, and improve the lives in those communities. So what we take federal dollars and we utilize them the best we can, leveraging local and state dollars to maximize all of our projects to raise our communities and potentially to keep them from being distressed.
So the Delta Regional Authority, historically, coming out of the great floods and so forth, which is what created a lot of the distress in that area. There's actually a town named after me up there called Newellton, I believe. It's in Tensaw Parish.
You're exactly right, and coincidentally, that's where I was raised, in Newellton. And I was going to ask you, was that a coincidence? Because there's a whole family cemetery there that are the Newells, so you might want to come check us out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been up there. I've hunted up there. It is truly sportsman's
paradise. Of course you did. Everybody comes up there to kill
paradise.
Our wonderful deer. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And y'all have some big ones up there, too, Leslie.
Yes, sir. We're very proud of them. Yes, sir.
But I know historically that area was very susceptible to flooding, and in the aftermath was in the 1927 floods, if my memory serves me correct, the development of the levee system and really the rebuilding of societies up there, right?
Yes, sir. It actually, the Delta Regional Authority footprint does follow the Mississippi River on both sides, and it does include a few counties over in Alabama, but their makeup and the fact that they're distressed, how they got there, has a lot to do with farming and what was happening back during that time, the generational poverty, just everything that we experienced here along the river in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Illinois, Missouri, and Kentucky all experienced the same thing, and so that's the reason why we are all included in this commission.
Yeah. Is Avoyelles Parish part of the Delta Regional Authority?
Absolutely.
Louisiana? Yeah, that's where my family's from. So, I mean, a lot of the same issues north they experience there on both sides of the river. I remember my dad telling me the stories of the floods and the distress and the economy and the failure on so many different fronts, and that it required federal assistance in order to stand themselves up at a point in time where obviously the economy wasn't as sophisticated as it is today.
You know, you're exactly right. And one thing that we have an opportunity right now, and I think you alluded to it in your earlier conversation, is the federal assistance that is coming down after this pandemic. We have had opportunities like this similar before, and they didn't work out real well. For instance, one of the things that I was doing for Governor John Bel Edwards was looking at the distressed water systems throughout the state. Back in the 60s, actually it's before I was born, so I don't know exactly the date, forgive me, but they had some significant funding come down through USDA to set up water systems. And so everybody wanted their own separate water system. Well, guess what we're doing today? We are consolidating those water systems because we can't sustain the very small water systems. We're going to have to band together and be able to produce water, take care of our folks. So knowing what can happen when you have a significant number of dollars come through for projects, it is incumbent onto us to look forward and do be good stewards of that money. So in 10 years or 15 years, we're not trying to undo what we do today.
What would you say is the biggest challenge right now for the Delta region?
Right now, we have a lot of elected officials that are looking at significant dollars that they have to invest in their communities and need to know what to do with them it for their future, not for right now, of course. And so I think education for our elected officials is most important to be able to utilize the dollars properly.
Yeah. And obviously, and Ileana, you can pipe in this as well. You know, part of this competitive nature when you're talking about urban areas versus rural areas, level of sophistication of governance and alike, obviously in the urban areas, they're doing this every day, all day, all year long, not nearly as aggressive in the rural areas. How do we bring about that balance to make sure that priorities throughout our state in all of the regions are met?
Well, we partner with organizations like TNO Inc. and your planning and development district there, the New Orleans Planning Development District. We've got a good partner there with Maggie Woodruff, mm-hmm. and of course Michael and his entire team. And when you have folks like that on the ground to help with the information that we can partner with to get that information out, that's where the secret sauce is. Okay, so when we have, and we've got the opportunity right now is here, especially with broadband. So that's where we're going to level the playing field. But getting that information out to our rural communities of what is available, what can happen, what would happen if they have this availability, it is where we lean on our partners like GNO Inc.
Mm-hmm. How confident are you, Ileana, you can pipe in too if you want. I hear a lot about broadband, you know, and how confident are you that you've got all the players, especially those in the technology sectors, and is there the sustenance there for these systems to keep them alive and well? I mean, it's one thing to build them. It's a whole nother thing, as you well know, with your water systems to maintain them.
No, sir. You've got to have a holistic approach. So we saw this several years back, about 20 years ago, in close to where we were talking about a little community called Waterproof. Mm-hmm. So USDA had a program that got broadband, Cadillac broadband to Waterproof, Louisiana. We looped in 12 parishes to be able to do that, accomplish that task. To get the grant, the company had to provide a communication center with computers free to the locals for a year. And then after that, all of the infrastructure belonged to the company. So for that whole year, nobody participated with the computers. We didn't have a program that taught the locals how to use computers or how to do business on the internet and that kind of thing. So it died. The Waterproof didn't benefit from the grant program. Some other parishes did, but the main purpose was to support that one community that was in need, and it didn't work. And then they had their Cadillac internet was 10-1, so that eliminated them from any other support up until recently. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's really, you know, we have to look at not just the actual physical infrastructure, and we look really hard toward fiber to the home, but we have to move beyond that and look at affordability. And we have to make sure that our workforce is trained enough to utilize it. We have to connect all of our schools and nursing homes to health care so we can take full advantage of what's coming. We have to prepare for the rain.
Well, Leslie, I'm glad you brought that up, that, you know, it's not just the initial investment in broadband, but it's everything that comes with it. You know, what we refer to in other areas is, you know, your wraparound services. So are the folks there to install it? Do you have the money, you know, to maintain it? Do folks know how to use it? But it is good to see rural areas getting some more attention. You know, you have the state gumbo program, the granting unserved municipalities broadband opportunities that was set up through American Rescue Plan funds. And today they announced who is seeking grants through the program, and there is a lot of rural. There are a lot of applicants from rural areas, from Washington Parish, from Tangipahoa. So that's good to see that the message is getting out there.
Yeah. Let's get to a break, and we'll continue this conversation with Ileana Lede from GNO Inc. and Leslie Dandridge-Durham. She is the alternate federal co-chairwoman of the Delta Regional Authority. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Ileana Lede, VP of Public Policy for GNO Inc., as well as Leslie Dandridge-Durham. She's the alternate federal co-chairwoman of the Delta Regional Authority, which is has eight participating states, folks, just to put this in context: Alabama, Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. Leslie, I was kind of curious. There's been a lot of talk about rail, and Michael Heck and Ileana and myself have talked about rail a lot. The more rural areas of the DRA is chock full of rail. And is there a future for transfer points and things of that nature along the lines of rail?
I've actually heard conversation about some of that specifically in Louisiana. Of course, I'm more familiar with Louisiana. I represented Governor Blanco and Governor John Bel Edwards on the Delta Regional Authority board. So I'm more familiar. Of course, I was born and raised, so I'm more familiar with Louisiana, so I can speak to that, but not as much in the other states, but I'm sure that it's similar. I'm aware of some efforts that are not just improving the rail lines in the footprint, but also putting back the rail lines that had been removed.
Yeah,
because there's been
quite a bit
of
abandoned rail, because y'all service a lot of smaller ports along the river as well, right?
Absolutely, and in particular. The ports that are along the river in the northeast corner, they have an effort going right now to connect to Arkansas.
The Delta region, too, through all of these states, have experienced similar things as it relates to consolidation of the old small family farms to a lot of co-ops and then to a lot of corporate-owned stuff, and that transformation seems to continue. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, and that goes along with what we are here for today, is to work on improving our workforce and what we are, and also our leadership program. We had a double graduation today, graduating 2020 class and the 2021 class of our leadership program.
And these folks come from all walks of life, I mean, throughout the Delta region?
Absolutely. Everything you can imagine, from just a nonprofit, somebody that's got a great idea that's in their community wanting to do something and don't know what direction to go, to a small rural mayor, a police juror, county supervisor, county mayor. We even have some congressional staffers occasionally that join in the program, and state employees even. We have folks from all walks of life, which makes it's more diverse and very interesting classes. It's just like a gumbo. We just have a little bit of everything.
You know, Ileana, you may want to opine on this, but from my view and my perspective, I'm familiar with a lot of what's going on in the Delta through a number of states, predominantly because I'm a hunter. I've hunted in almost all of these states along the Delta, because it's got some of the finest hunting in the country, quite frankly. But when you get to see and meet the people and get to see a lot of the challenges, it always seems and occurred to me that there's just so much more that can come out of the Delta region. And I don't want to use the word exploit, but there's just so many things that we can do there. You know, the availability of land, the availability of rail, of water. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And just good, hardworking people.
Exactly. And, you know, as usual, you know, you have your finger on the pulse. When you brought up rail, I got excited because Amtrak had a press release earlier this week. And, you know, they're talking about committing to exploring service between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, but also beyond that, studying the potential for service between Meridian, Mississippi, and Dallas, you know, extending across different areas. So it's good that we're seeing this commitment and a public commitment on extending rail service. But, yeah, there are a lot of assets that need to be utilized outside of our urban areas. And, you know, it's something really we pay attention to, because if we really want to elevate our region, if we really want to compete with the likes of Austin, Atlanta, Birmingham, Nashville, what have you, it's going to take elevating those opportunities across the spectrum, geographically, income levels. It's going to take all of us and capitalizing on our assets to really elevate our region. We can't just focus on, you know, certain areas.
No doubt. No doubt at all. Leslie Dandridge-Durham, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time and insight, and best of luck in all of y'all's endeavors with the Delta Regional Authority. We appreciate your service over the years. And Ileana, as always, always love to have you here instead of Michael. You can tell him that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know he'll get a little chuckle out of that for sure, but much at his expense. And it's okay.
Always a good time.
Thank you, Newell. I know when you get a chance, come back up and go hunting.
Absolutely.
We have a lot more going on in those Delta communities than you know of. The pandemic actually has shown everyone that you can live in rural community if you have internet and FedEx. So folks are moving and things are happening, and we're very excited about the future.
And there's no doubt life's a lot easier there in many respects than here, for sure.
Amen.
Ladies, thank
Amen.
Y'all.
No traffic.
I appreciate it. Y'all have a great week. We'll be right back, folks.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.